delayed start time today, it's actually a little after 10 a.m. today, February 25th. We're joined with Senator Hoffman, Senator Stevens, Co-Chair Wilkin, and myself, Senator Green. And as a reminder, cell phones and pagers need to be turned off at this point. And we'll continue the overview of Senate Bill 75 and Senate Bill 76, the two supplementals. And we'll begin hearing from admin, hopefully corrections law, public safety, revenue, and if time permits, DOT. But since we have this delayed start time, we're not sure exactly how far we're going to get today. Okay, admin, are you ready for this?
Chair, Senator, for the record, I'm Dan Spencer, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Administration.
Did you give your last name again?
Spencer.
Spencer, thank you.
With me, I have several other folks. If you have detailed questions that I can't answer, I'd like to pass off to them. I think online in Anchorage, I'm hoping we have Grant McGee and Barb Brink, the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender, and we have some other folks also as well. The first section, Section 1, the first item under Section 1 for a supplemental for the Department of Administration, and I'm looking here at the not-so-fast-track bill, and I will tie in the fast-track bill.
You're doing the regular supplemental. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. $400,000 to the Division of Finance for chargeback overruns in the state's accounting and payroll systems. Basically, what this is the bills that we're experiencing for the centralized accounting and payroll systems at this point are running about $400,000 ahead of last year. $300,000 of that is for normal processing costs for the accounting system and the payroll system, and another $100,000 of that is related to converting our payroll system into a new platform, which takes a little bit more time for the computers to run, and so the costs for that are a little bit higher. These are charges that are due to the Division of Information Technology Group for mainframe processing time.
Any questions? Okay, let the record show we've been joined by Senator Bundy. Senator Bundy, they've begun, admin has begun on the regular supplemental. They've just finished item 1, which is 1A1. Okay, go ahead, Dan.
If there are no questions, I'll go to number 2, $390,700 from the General Fund of Pioneers Homes for increased cost of certified nurse aides and assisted living aides. The department had a class study done on the certified nurse aides and assisted living aides in the Pioneers Homes. This was a class study, not a salary study. As some of you may recall, several years ago, the nurses in the homes had a salary study done, and there were some adjustments made. This actually looked at the question of what were the duties that were being assigned to the certified nursing aides and Pioneer Home aides in relation to other duties to other employees in the state system. As a result of that, certified nurse aides duties were recognized as being one salary range higher, from a range 9 to a range 10. Pioneer Home aides were reclassified to be called assisted living aides, and their salaries were increased 2 ranges, from range 7 to range 9. Now, this is broadly speaking, this was examined both as broad classes and then individually, and some positions did not go up. Some positions either stayed at the same salary level or were reclassed down, although the employees there would stay at the same level for 2 years. As a result of that, we anticipate an annual increase in salary costs for the Pioneers Homes in the neighborhood of $700,000. For FY03, we expect $390,700 based on a combination of the increased salaries that we paid in December. The salary change took effect December 1st. And what we project throughout the rest of the fiscal year.
Okay, do I recall a conversation that Some do, no money appropriated in this act may be used to pay cost of personnel due to job reclassification. And what is the difference in reclassification study and a salary study? I think you were trying to explain that, and I think I lost.
There is a difference, Senator, and I think Dave Stewart from Division of Personnel, if we get too technical, would have to go out and help me. But basically, a classification study examines the nature of the specific duties that people have compared to other duties. And part of that is to ensure that people are paid appropriately compared to other positions within state government. In other words, equal pay for equal work in a short sentence. A salary study takes a particular type of position and looks at what comparable salaries are both within the public and private sectors, and it encompasses some particular geographic area. In the case of the nursing salary study that took place two or three years ago, that looked at comparable wages both with other government operations, with nonprofit operations, and other places in the Pacific.
And that's a salary.
That is a salary study. This is a pure classification study. What jobs are these people doing compared to other jobs within our system, and are they being classified and paid comparably? The language that you refer to, Senator, my understanding is that the Attorney General in the former administration said that language infringed upon the administration of administering government. It was an administrative matter. The classification of an individual position or a group of positions is an administrative matter as opposed to a legislatively matter subject to appropriation. And so the language was advisory in the nature of intent as opposed to a condition on appropriation. The fact of the matter is, we have an obligation to, if we become aware that our salaries, that people are misclassified, we have an obligation under statute and under the Constitution to keep employees classified appropriately. And once we've determined that some people are misclassified and that they should be, their job duties or their classification and their pay should be changed, then we have some obligation to act immediately. And there is a statutory basis for that, and if you'd like to go further into that, I'll have to ask Dave Stewart to come up and talk to you about it.
I wouldn't mind that. In fact, I have a question. But in the meantime, can you tell me when the study began?
The study began last summer. I'm not sure exactly when. Summer of 02.
Okay.
And it was finished, and the new classification were implemented on December 1st.
Dave, what is the time frame that after a classification study is completed, what is the implementation time? If you give your name for the record, please.
Well, for the record, Madam Chair, my name is Dave Stewart. I'm with the Division of Personnel in the Department of Administration. Timelines. Under the personnel rules adopted under the State Personnel Act and through contractual negotiation, the effective date of a classification study is the first day of the pay period following the completion of the study, which is either the 1st or the 16th of the month.
Just for the record, this was instituted effective 12/1/02.
December 1st.
Which is 1 week before the new governor was inaugurated. So, any other comments? Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Spencer, my question is in relation to our difficulty in hiring nurses in general, but I would like to know what is being done in that arena, as well as specifically these certified nurses aides. Are we having problems in hiring and retaining these people as well?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, two questions. As regards the nurses, as I mentioned earlier, we did do a salary study several years ago. We did increase a nurse's salary, and I believe that did help us with the recruitment and retention of nurses. As far as the certified nurse aides, I don't I wouldn't characterize us as having a big recruitment or retention issue with certified nurse aides. And that was not the driving force behind this particular study. This study was simply, how do they compare to other positions? For example, nurse or aides in API or other places like that. I don't think we have a particular recruitment or retention problem that I'm aware of with certified nurse aides.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dan, I don't have any problem with the outcome of the reclassification. I just have a great problem with how it was done in light of Section 6, Chapter 94 state law last year. And this was a reclassification, and you said that that even though it was a reclassification, it fell outside that law because it was the law was termed to be advisory and not law. So I understood you right on that. Okay. What would happen if this just wasn't funded in the supplemental?
Then we would have to take the funding somewhere else in the high nurse homes. I mean, we would have to pay the salary.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may make one other point about this, and it relates to the language also. One thing I think it's important for the committee to understand is that what we are talking here is a large classification study involved over 340 positions. We, on a daily basis, look at classification of positions. We adjust positions up, we adjust positions down. Literally, every day, there are positions that are adjusted. What is unusual about this is the scope. It is a large group of positions. And there is a long list of fairly broad scope classifications that agencies would like to see. But in fact, most of the classification actions that we take administratively through the normal course of running government, you never see because we never come to you because of funding concerns. Most of them, if there is a change where three or four or five or seven positions go up, we eat the cost. This one, it is such a large cost over the course of a year, and it is in a program that already has 100 beds that are vacant, and the only way for us to adjust and to absorb this over the longer term is to force some more of those beds vacant. It would take us a while to do that because of how the homes work. So the what you are seeing here is the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we do this daily. It's just this is a huge number of people.
It's just interesting because I don't think I've ever seen a request for supplemental of this size. But what I have one more question, and that has to do with, are all of these positions currently filled, or are you budgeting for open positions that you plan to fill between now and June the 30th?
All the positions are not currently filled. This estimate that you have is based primarily on the actual payroll between what we paid in December versus what we would have paid. So there is not really an allowance for unfilled positions. This is not saying that we will fill every position between now and the end of the fiscal year, because we know, frankly, that wouldn't happen.
But that's not in your calculation, though. I just want to be sure this is for actual bodies.
I believe this is strictly based on payroll today.
Thank you. Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just an aside, you say you literally adjust the reclassified positions every day. A little hard for me to understand. Someone comes to work and classified as one position, and the next day they're another.
Senator Bundy, I wish that the process worked that quickly, or within a year of being that quickly. We have positions as we assign different duties to them or whatever. We undertake a classification review. This may involve the Division of Personnel, or it may involve the individual department. That happens all over the place. If we see a shift in some of our duties in the division of motor vehicles, for example, or a particular person leaves and we don't plan to fill a position, and we need to take some of the duties from that position and assign them elsewhere, then we have an obligation to look at the one or two or three people that would be absorbing those other duties to see that they're actually classified appropriately and whether they're being paid appropriately. By the same token, if we had an employee that had a lot of activity funneling through their position, and we needed to free up some time, so we reassigned some duties, we again have an obligation to look at the new duties assigned to that position. And so it may take a week, it may take 6 weeks, depending on a variety of factors. It could even take longer than that. But at some point, we would say, okay, here's the way the position should be appropriately classified. At that point, we sit down with the employee and we say, this is where we're going to end up. There is an appeal process for all of these, and in fact, I think at least two of the bargaining units, perhaps more of that, have an opportunity to appeal those changes in classifications also to the Director of the Division of Personnel. Those are mostly on individual positions or groups of two or three positions. But literally, at any point in time, I think it's safe to say that every department out there probably has from one to a couple dozen of these on their plate at any one point in time, depending on the size of the department.
Continue.
I understand the reason we're doing it, but the notion that we'd have to do that daily throughout the Department of Administration seems like generating an awful lot of work, and that perhaps some longer range planning somehow ought to come into play so that we wouldn't have these many short-term changes.
Senator, we have a long-range plan, a long-term plan, and it is a very lengthy list. But we do have an obligation to compensate people appropriately to the work that they're doing, and that's what drives us. And if we recognize that there's been a significant change in duties, can we wait 6 months before we adjust pay, either up or down? And the answer to that, under the existing statute, is no. We have an obligation to act.
Madam Chair, and I don't need to pursue it any further at this time. And I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying that perhaps there ought not to be so many changes in duty then, but something to do with the commissioner, perhaps.
That'll be a good topic for discussion in the subcommittee. So you have the opportunity. Okay. Any other questions on that item? Pardon me?
They just need to assess our pay before getting compensated fairly.
Well, I don't want to go there. Okay, next item, Pam.
Could be adjusted down, too.
Madam Chair, this is $14,300 federal receipts to the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission for our underground injection program. We have an existing grant from the federal government. It's $105,000. We've had it for a couple of years. It's just they've made more grant funds available. The next item, Madam Chair, is $2,473,500 from GF to the Public Office of Public Advocacy. There is a companion piece in the Fast Track Supplemental for an additional $826,500. The sum of those two is $3.3 million. Madam Chair, this is a historical item, so to speak, in that it shows up every year. I think it's 18 years, there has only been 1 year that the Office of Public Advocacy has not required supplemental funding. That particular year followed an ombudsman's report pointing out that most of the money was going to private sector attorneys working on behalf of cases carried by OPA. Last year, the budget for the Office of Public Advocacy that was enacted by the legislature was actually less than the actual expenditures from the year before that. At the time the legislature passed the budget last year, we were estimating a supplemental need for the Office of Public Advocacy of $2.2 million based on the caseload and the intensity of the caseload that we had last year. At this point, caseload continues to increase, and the amount of legal activity for that caseload is increasing. And that's why we've gone up from 2.2 million to 3.3 million. One thing I will tell you, and we've done this every year for, I think most of you have seen some version of this over the years. We, in beginning in January, have monthly projections that each of the divisions present to the department manager. And so we will adjust this if necessary. We have, in the past, adjusted it in both directions. Sometimes, as we get nearer the end of session, it goes up. Sometimes it goes down. And we have always been as prompt as we could be in bringing adjusted numbers to the attention of the committee.
Okay. One of the things that, in looking at your request between the fast track and the slow track, and the $826,000 to get through the end of May, and then the $2.5 million to get, that's, how, why is that, I mean, that's more than, that's not a one-month portion of the year. Was that what you were just explaining?
Actually,
why is that going to be so much? I mean, that's like more than, that's nearly a fifth of your annual budget.
Fine question, Senator, and I skipped over that part of my note, so I shouldn't have done that. The way we arrived at the amount that's in the fast track versus the slow track is we estimate we have enough funding right now in the budget to get us to May.
To May or the end of May?
No, to the start of May.
Okay, and then 826 gets you to the end of May.
The 826.5 will get us, 500 will get us through May, and then the balance of the funding we would need available to us by June. Now, as you know, that if the legislature passes a supplemental appropriation in the middle of May, and even if the governor does not sign it until June 30th, there is a long-standing opinion of the Attorney General that says that we can have access to the funds as long as we're sure the governor won't veto the money out, because the only thing between the funds being available is passage of time. But one of the interesting things about the Office of Public Advocacy is the amount of money that is paid after the fiscal year ends. We continue to get bills in from vendors, in this case primarily private attorneys, through what we call the 14th and or the 13th and 14th accounting months. The fiscal year ends on June 30th. Bills are still coming in, and so you have another couple of months where you're getting bills in. Those bills are for services provided during a particular year, fiscal year, and so the payment should come from that particular fiscal year services. The Office of Public Advocacy in July and August normally pays more than $700,000 worth of billings during that period of time. And so what we did to calculate this is just figured out, we sort of worked backwards on if past expenditure patterns hold true this year, this is how we would need the money. We would need $826,000 to get us through May, and then the rest of it, presuming that it was available in the supplemental, would carry us through the rest of the fiscal year and beyond.
That's bizarre. So, when you bring your records to the subcommittee, I would like to know and have you prepared to talk about what it's going to cost you to operate for 12 months, the next 12 months, not then July and August added back in to in a supplemental, because to me that would nearly be in another, that should be in another column altogether if that's going to be held separate. But if you know that's going to happen every year, let's make, write up what it actually is going to cost you. And we're not going to pretend we're not going to have it. We're not going to have a supplemental next year. There's not going to be this discussion about OPA and public defender next year. I want your realistic budget when you come to Senator Bundy on the subcommittee. And I want it included, your late billings, your early billings, your what it costs to operate, but I want it pared down to reality and exactly what it is. Because we don't want to keep doing supplementals. Okay, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I appreciate your comments. And if we follow through with that, you probably won't see very many amendments that will come from this chair. I might
that make you
out.
Happy?
Very, very happy. I might point out that last year we had an amendment for about $2.3 million, and that is still $1.1 million less than what the department is requesting. But I do have some concerns about the direction that that is being requested here. You said historically we've had supplementals, but they have not been to the magnitude that we're seeing today. In fact, you know, if you go back to prior years, they've been as low as $200,000, and for the last 5 years, they've been averaging less than, right around $500,000. So other than the fact that we've short-funded this program by the $2.2 million from your prior request, you said that $1.1 million is in addition to that. Why are we seeing such a substantial increase in this program?
Senator Hoffman, Madam Chair, I think if Brent McGee is online, this would be the time to hear from him.
Brent, did you hear the question? Is Brent McGee online? Do I need to hit anything here?
Mr. Chairman, or Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, a couple of factors are in here. The first is there's a caseload increase. It continues to be.
Say it louder.
Caseload increase.
Okay.
Another factor is the intensity of some of the litigation. My understanding is that a substantial amount of caseload increase is in child in need of aid cases. And as you recall, a couple of years ago, we did tighten some deadlines or some time frames on when some of these cases need to be pursued through the system. Well, whenever you shorten the time frame, you tend to litigate things a lot more intensely. And so my understanding is that the average amount of time going into cases is increasing as well as caseload increasing at the same time. Those two factors are driving the change. I'm not an expert in the internal workings there, and I would not want to go too much further than that. I would be happy to have Brent either talk to you, Senator, or come to the subcommittee so that everyone can get a full appreciation of that. But one thing I should mention on there, Madam Chair, in regards to projecting exactly what we would need next year, there is a limit to how precise we can be. And certainly we would be happy to have what we anticipate to be full year funding for this program because, as I say, it would be a very rare thing indeed. But the cases that come to the Office of Public Advocacy are assigned by the court. Every single case that goes to the Office of Public Advocacy is assigned by the court. We cannot predict with certainty the amount of cases that the court will assign, nor the type, because the type of cases will significantly affect the average cost per case. But we would do our best based on prior year patterns.
Okay. Just to follow up.
Senator Halpin.
Chairman, the problem that I see is that this last year we've seen 20,000 additional new cases. And to me, that seems substantially very, very high. And there must be something happening in this area to see this market increase. And I was wondering if this is an anomaly or is this something that can be anticipated in future years? And are the judges making different decisions?
Senator Hoffman, I think you've skipped down a line to public defender.
Okay.
We're kind of mixing the conversation about Office of Public Advocacy and public defender. But that's one of the questions I have on that 20,000 for the next. And for the record, Brent McGee is online. Do you need him to?
Sure. If I could just actually, I'd like to address that 20,000 because the same generic question applies to help, and then I'll turn it over to Brent if you will.
Thank you. Go ahead.
What they are talking about there is the number of new cases assigned each year. We have a residual caseload, which are cases that were assigned last year that we're still working on, both in public defender and OPA. But as you know, if someone's charged with a crime today and they're indigent, they get assigned by the court. So we get new cases every year. The question is the volume of new cases. You know, the new cases for the Public Defender Agency over the years have gone from, you know, 14,000, 15,000, 16,000. So the number of cases they get assigned annually continues to increase. That is really where that was aimed at. And with that, Madam Chair, Brandt, hello.
Madam Chair, this is Brandt McGee. For the record, I'm responsible for the Office of Public Advocacy, and I'd just like to add a little bit to Mr. Spencer's remarks. First, I believe the 20,000 figure may relate to the Public Defender Agency rather than the Office of Public Advocacy. Can you hear me, Madam Chair?
Yes, you're coming in fine. Go ahead.
Thank you. In addition, it must be recalled with respect to these ever larger supplementals that for the past number of years, I think 4 years, the supplemental appropriation has not been rolled into our base budget, hence the increase. There are a number of factors at work here. One is caseload increase, but that's but one factor. The second thing is that our growth and our costs have been in the child in need of aid area. And the reason for that is because, as Mr. Spencer pointed out, there's a much more intense litigation in those areas. And by intense litigation, I mean that there is a stronger adversarial context because of the timelines. People are much more likely to fight about things if they're facing deadlines. I'm not saying the deadlines are bad. In fact, I think they're good, but there are costs associated with that. The third thing is that the Office of Public Advocacy is responsible for representing the child in these cases, but we also have a corollary statutory responsibility to provide representation when the Public Defender Agency has a conflict of interest. So often, OPA is paying public dollars to private counsel, that is our contractors, to represent one of the parents in the proceeding. So in child in need of aid cases, it is very common for OPA to be paying half the litigation costs with the Attorney General and the public defender also involved in the case, and OPA paying for both the child advocate as well as parents counsel. So that's one of the reasons that we see greater costs. That's actually the primary reason that we're seeing these greater costs as the years go on. Madam Chair, I would welcome the opportunity to prepare a budget that would cover all our anticipated expenses in FY04. We have done that pretty consistently over the years. We have, as Mr. Spencer pointed out, only been fully funded 1 year. That was 1991, the first year of the Hickel administration. Otherwise, we've been in supplemental mode throughout the existence of the agency.
Thank you. One of the things that I think I'm going to have some questions to direct to Senator Bundy to also have you talk about in subcommittee is your role in the OPA's role with senior citizens as well. But we won't talk about that today. Are there any questions for Brandt McGee? I guess so. Okay. Thank you, Brandt.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, the next item is $1,157,000 general fund to the Public Defender Agency. And Madam Chair, this conversation would sound a lot like the conversation related to OPA.
I just want to confirm that the 20,000 is a correct number.
When you statistically worked that out,
we kept thinking maybe it was a typo.
I believe that's the number of new cases assigned during the course of the year by the court. That's as other cases are going away. But is Barb Brink available?
Madam Chair, this is Barb Brink with the Alaska Public Defender Agency. In fact, that number of 20,031 new case appointments is accurate. Those are the new cases assigned to my agency in the last fiscal year. And you are correct, it's a rather dramatic increase The prior year, we were assigned 19,400 cases. Madam Chair, I'd like to give you a couple of examples of where our increased caseload growth has been. Mr. McGee is correct that child in need of aid cases have increased. Those appointments are up 4% statewide. And in those situations, the public defender agency is appointed to represent parents whose children have been removed from the home. The other startling statistic from last year is that serious felony cases are up 13% statewide. And in those situations, we obviously represent the indigent person who's accused of a crime. Because many of these cases have serious consequences and mandatory imprisonment, and many of these cases are complex with forensic issues or psychiatric issues, these cases, again, are very costly to defend. A couple of other quick examples of the last year. The legislature changed the minor consuming rules. We toughened up the penalties, and the consequence of that decision was to entitle these minor consuming clients to a jury trial and an attorney. For example, in fiscal year 99, we only had 22 of these cases. This year, we're going to have over 800 of these cases. Similar consequence occurred in the DWI arena. After we passed the 0.08 and the 10-year look back, our caseload rose from 809 to over 2,000. And in our Ketchikan office, I think it's economic factors that have increased our case appointments. With the closing of Ward Cove and Pulp Mill, our caseload, misdemeanor caseload there, increased by over 80%. So these are just specific examples of the increases that I've been able to pinpoint over the last year. And as you know, the Public Defender Agency, like the Office of Public Advocacy, must take a case when appointed by the court. And based on the Constitution, statutes, and rules, there are certain items of work that we must perform in every case. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you. Ms. Frank, I'm really having trouble with that 20,000 number. That's 80 cases a day. And I can't quite get myself to that. So I wonder if you would put together a table that shows the breakdown, however you can classify those 20,000 cases as to their source, and some sort of classification. And I'm sitting here thinking about if we're Alaska with 600,000 people, what does Washington or Texas or other states do that have multiples of our population? We can't be comparable when we're producing 80 cases a day of public defender work. So if you could help us understand that number, then perhaps we could help with this budget. Thank you.
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkin, I'd be happy to do that. In fact, I do have a chart with all of the FY02 cases broken down by location and type of case. And I'll make sure that you have a copy of that.
And could you also look back, whatever's easy to get at, 5 to 10 years, and show us that $20,000 caseload number as we look backwards?
Through the Chair, yes, Senator Wilkin, I actually have a look back all the way to 1988 that I'll send you.
Thank you, Barb.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, the next item is $73,000 Mental Health Trust authorized receipts to the Public Defender Agency for a mental health court attorney. This is an item that is in the last year's budget. We could have taken this as an RPL to the LBNA committee, but we instead put it in the supplemental because there was no urgency to it. The services are being performed. It was added last year to the FY 2002 budget via RPL. The Mental Health Trust Authority wants that program to continue, and so we've asked for the funding.
Will that be in next year's budget as well?
That's a fine question for Barb. I'm not sure if the trust is.
Well, just before you get to subcommittee, just have that worked out. So if it's a predictable, likely occurrence. Next item.
Madam Chair, the next item is $209,300 from the general fund to labor relations for the cost of mediated labor settlement. Let me preface my remarks by I can't go into any detail on the settlement, mostly because I don't know them. And I was hoping to have our chance here available today, but for some reason, he's not sitting behind me. But basically what it is, as you'll recall from years ago, There were Fair Labor Standards Act, and it was determined that a large number of state employees fell under the Fair Labor Standards Act law. And there were several hundred claims being pursued by the bargaining units. And the claims, as my understanding, went back and forth between the Department of Administration and the Department of Law. At one point, it became apparent that there was an opportunity to reach a settlement. It was passed back to labor relations. We got a mediator in there, and we reached a settlement for $200,000 to distinguish all claims for the Alaska State Employees Association. The total value of those claims would have been between $700,000 and $1 million had we lost all of them. Plus, we would have had to go to hearing on each one of them, and we would have had a lot of other costs. So the $200,000 was to just say, let's be done with all these claims. They've been lingering for, I think, since 1993, and be done with this. The extra $9,238 is statutory interest on this from the day the settlement was agreed to, which was May 8th of last year, until it's paid, and we just assumed it would be paid on June 30th when we calculated the interest.
Any questions? Next item.
And Chair, next item, although it's hard to read in the bill, is taking $300,000 of general fund from the General Relief Program in the Division of Senior Services. This is the Vulnerable Adults Program. We have a statutory obligation if we receive a report of a vulnerable adult who might be suffering from harm or neglect. Generally, we put them in assisted living facilities and pay for them until we can come to some long-term resolution. Over the past several years, what we have seen in this program is caseload growth. And in fact, I think we have come to the legislature for a supplemental in each of the last 3 years. This year, the caseload is not increasing as much as we expected it to. In fact, this is very close to what we'd asked for as a increment in the budget last year, and the legislature gave, appropriated. But our caseload growth through January of this year is that, we're, in fact, there isn't as much as we forecast. We don't need the money, and so here it is.
Yo, we're going to accept that one.
Hard to believe, but it's true.
That one's approved.
If you have a gold star, we could put
it. I know. There you go.
Started with that one.
Okay. Now, do you have anything in the fast track?
The OPA amount that we discussed.
Okay, we've already discussed that.
And there is one other item in the slow track.
Okay.
And it's a technical item, if you would. It's section 16, which is miscellaneous claims and stale dated warrants.
Mm-hmm.
The amount there for the Department of Administration is $44,916.88. There are no miscellaneous claims here for us. Those are all stale dated warrants. What these are checks the state has written that have expired. And they have 2 years to be cashed.
Checks the state has what?
Has written to someone for whatever reason and that have not been cashed, have not been presented for payment within 2 years. This happens for a variety of reasons. Someone may have lost the check. Someone may have put all the checks in a coffee can and stashed them under their bed. An elderly person, that does happen. I mean, you've got a wide variety of reasons. These checks have been found, they're being presented for payment, and this is simply to make good on the checks.
Do you have a system whereby you kind of check your system to be sure you haven't issued checks that aren't supposed
to
be issued?
We do that before we put these in the bill. We ensure that no one has. They see have never been presented for payment before.
I mean, ongoing. That seems like a lot of money.
It is, but we
sent out there that.
I understand.
I don't think we have
a system in place that says has a check been cashed within the last 30 days. We wrote it 30 days ago. Has it come in yet? And that's primarily because of the huge volume of checks that we send out.
Are there any questions for Dan? Yes, Senator Bundy.
I don't know if this is an appropriate place to ask. I don't know if it was your department that had some of those checks that were floating around Anchorage that were creatively cashed. But it would be interesting to know if any of those came from the Department of Administration during such meeting, meaning what checks and balances we're going to put in place to, because once someone's done it, they're likely to encourage someone else, and OPA's budget will go up again.
Senator, I don't know the answer to that question, but we'll ask.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan. Okay. Community Economic Development, you here? Corrections?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Gary Brunetta. I'm the Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Corrections. We have one item in the Slow Track Supplemental, which is an amount of $187,680.05, which is for a medical bill which was received late. It was an FY02 bill which was received in November, too late for us to pay.
Could that have been in ratification?
Excuse me?
Could that have been in the other section? Miscellaneous claims?
It's larger than just miscellaneous claims, so.
$187,000.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Very good.
But we can't pay it without a supplemental appropriation because it's a fiscal year overdue. In the Fast Track Supplemental, we have $1,500,000 of which is general fund and $500,000 of which is statutory designated program receipts for the Anchorage Jail. And
we're combining transactions 2A and 2B
right.
in this discussion. Okay.
So it's $1 million. And we had approximately $1 million in costs stemming from an accident that happened on the Seward Highway on November 19th, which one correctional officer and four prisoners were killed, and three prisoners were hospitalized. And the costs, a majority of the costs, in fact, a little over $900,000 of the costs are from direct hospital bills for the prisoners.
The three surviving prisoners. Okay. I know I've heard some discussion about the status of the investigation, the liability of the other driver, and there, or is that an ongoing?
As of 2 days ago, the police report had not been completed, and it was expected to be completed within the month, and liability would be assessed after that. Our position, we have these people there in the hospital, we have a contract with the hospital, and we pay the bills. So.
Okay. So you might expect to see this money be refunded or reimbursed?
It would come back in.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions on that item? Okay.
And then we do have also some small amounts in the miscellaneous claims bill for $3,300 or so for bills.
What item is that? Correction, I see. Okay, 16-2.
Right.
Okay.
16-2.
Then you have.
We have, I think, two small ratifications.
Okay.
But,
17A, 2A, and 2B.
Right. Again, very small amounts of money.
It has to do with fingerprinting.
Right.
219, 77, and 66, 64. Are there any questions from committee on those items? Okay. I understand that in the department you're working on addressing health care
Yes, we are.
And I wish you well on that, because I know that that's been an expense. It's been...
Well, we were actually, our supplemental request would have been slightly higher, except we were able to negotiate a slightly better rate with Alaska Regional Hospital for the rest of the year, so...
Keep at it. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, and... Law?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Catherine Dottie. I'm admin director for the Department of Law. I have a number of folks here with me today to help answer questions about items in both the Fast Track Supplemental and the, for lack of a better term, Slow Track Supplemental. I'd like to start with the Fast Track with the committee's permission.
Go ahead. That's 4A.
In the Fast Track Supplemental, the Department of Law has two items related to the criminal division. They're both rolled into Section 4A. $582,600 is needed to pay for the costs, mostly related to outside counsel in two major criminal cases, one having to do with sex offender registration. That case was just, the trial was just completed in Anchorage in January, and post-trial briefs are underway. No matter what the outcome of the case will be, we fully expect an appeal, and about $432,600 of this request would pay for those expenses anticipated in the Planned Parenthood case. The remainder of it, $150,000, is for the sex offender registration statute that the state is currently defending against a challenge in the Supreme Court, and we've completed that work in Washington, D.C., and at this time expect a decision perhaps as soon as this fall. But these expenses have already been incurred, and we're not anticipated in our fiscal year 03 operating budget or any special appropriation. Madam Chair, Pat Gullifson is here if the members have any questions about Section 4A.
Okay. Are there any questions? Senator Benton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Is the 432.6 anticipated to be the total cost of the lawsuit and the parental consent?
It covers the amount of money the Department of Law has already expended for a couple of folks to be brought back from retirement. Harry Davis from our, and Pat Dubin from our Fairbanks DA's office, and the costs of experts, and then it anticipates the post-trial brief, and it anticipates the appeal to be handled by outside counsel. I don't know if this will, in the long run, be sufficient enough for the entire run of the matter, but this is what we anticipate at this time. This is what we can...
Thank you.
Speak to.
I do find it. I just want to be on the record that the agency took of the on item 4A on the criminal justice litigation, part of their unallocated reduction from that section, the $250,000, and then and that, knowing that this was ongoing, it's a little problematic, but.
Madam Chair, Senator Green, the legislature gave us a $250,000 unallocated reduction focused on the criminal division.
It was assigned there?
I'm sorry?
It was assigned
yes.
to that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. But we have also received some carry forward, some authorization to carry forward unspent monies from fiscal year 03, so. That did not create a big hole in our present appropriation. It will be a problem for us going into 04 potentially.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you.
So Section 4B, $600,000 is for the oil and gas litigation section of our budget. We are looking at some reopeners, royalty reopeners, that are one in particular that is scheduled to begin here in the next couple of weeks and proceed along a very tight timeline. We feel like $600,000 is what the state will need to be on equal footing with the oil companies, who will be vigorously putting resources toward their position.
Okay, never mind. Any questions on that item? And did you have any entries in the regular supplemental?
In the regular supplemental, the Department of Law's annual request to pay for judgments and claims that have become ripe for appropriation is in the regular supplemental. That's Section 9. Scott Nordstrand, the Deputy Attorney General for the Civil Division, is here to go through those in one by one with you, if you'd like that, or if you have any specific questions about them. I do have the detail on one which probably isn't in your packet. That's the Hope, the request for...
Just let me admit, do members of the committee wish to go over each of those settlements and suits piece by piece, or would you like to do that on your own? And then come back. And then if we need you back, we'll call you back. But otherwise, we'll accept that as your... I think after some of the members have looked through them, they may have questions, and then we'll come back to it if we need to, okay?
Okay, and I'll get the committee the detail on the Hope then
after
the meeting. I just want to give the committee a heads up on this, though.
Okay.
The Catastrophic Reserve Fund has typically paid for settlements arising out of personal injury cases, and that fund, which is administered by the Department of Administration's Risk Management Section, is no longer sufficiently funded. You will see a number of items in this packet, and there are a number that are coming down the line, and it's going to be a lot of money this year. We anticipate the total of judgments and claims, when it's all said and done, will probably reach $4 to $5 million.
Next year?
This year.
But it's not reflected in this.
Not yet. There are a couple of items that the legal work has been completed, but there's paperwork to be finished. The Himsel case, which you may be aware,
say it again.
It's called Himsel. It was
Himsel.
The crash of a National Guard aircraft.
I know.
That's been settled, but I don't have that in your packet yet because we don't have all the legal paperwork done, although the matter has been settled.
And that can't be delayed until the next after June 30th.
If we delay it beyond July 15th, the settlement agreement allows for the interest to accrue on the outstanding amount. So it will cost the state money, more money, to delay this.
And then has the other case been settled? Or is it still hearing? The second case you're referring to?
The only one I referred to.
Is that one?
Of course, Miller's Reach is in, that could be, that's something that's out there as well, but that's in trial.
Okay.
That won't be this year.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Any questions about any of the judgments and claims? Thank you. If we need any more information, we'll get in touch with you, okay? Go ahead.
Section 10, $95,000 is sought to help us cover the cost of moving the Fairbanks District Attorney's Office from its former site in the old Fairbanks Courthouse. As a result of budget reductions in the Department of Transportation's budget, the old courthouse, which was a state-owned facility, was cold closed, and we moved out of that and into leased space closer to the new Rabinowitz Courthouse on November 1st. When the DA's office occupied a state-owned facility, we did not have to pay lease costs. Now we are in leased space from a private outfit, and we need to begin to pay lease costs there. So we are getting $134,000 from the Department of Transportation. That's savings that they incurred when they cold closed the courthouse. The rest of this money is needed to help us pay for the balance of the lease and to cover the cost of the move.
And this is just a one-time anticipated.
You will see a you will see an item in our fiscal year 04 budget very likely.
Lease in your lease.
To complete this. There'll be a transfer in the base from DOT to Department of Law of the savings, and then an offsetting, not offsetting, but an additional amount needed to completely pay for all of the money needed under the lease, which is about $200,000.
Okay. Senator Bundy, you get to investigate that one as well. The subcommittee. Okay. Any questions?
Department of Law has a small item in the judgments and the miscellaneous claims and stale dated warrants section that's to pay for fiscal year 02 billings that were not received in time.
Is the 18,000?
Yes.
Okay. Again, do you have a system in place to, it's kind of highlighting that there's three that are, I would say, higher than normal in here. And it's just sort of a warning that something's kind of out of kilter, so if we can figure out what's going on. And
I can tell you exactly what's going on, because we've never had one this high. The problem came for us when the legislature gave us the authority to move unspent fiscal year 02 money into 03, and we had big holes in our 03 budget because of reductions. We moved as much money as possible, and that meant that there wasn't sufficient lapsing, what we call lapsing authority, in the 02 budget to cover these late hits, because we always have them. But typically, we leave some money behind, or there's some lapse left over that we can use to handle this. But in this case, and I think this is a unique case, and I hope never to see it like this again, we did not leave sufficient monies behind to pay for these bills. And that's created the situation that you see here in the bill today.
At ease, please.
I just wanted to ask Catherine if she could get us the balance of the catastrophic reserve fund, please.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anything else in this document that you need to present?
Thank you. I think this is all the items for Department of Law.
Okay. We have a meeting that we must attend. We will begin the remainder of they will be announced as to the time. Next meeting will be Thursday, February the 27th. Bills heard that day are Senate Bill 51, Bonds of Bond Bank Authority, SCR 1, Support Roads, Hot Springs, Loop Road, and adoption of a longevity pay increment policy. Tomorrow morning in the Senate Finance Room at 8 a.m. is a key campaign presentation. I encourage you all to attend. Senator Wilkin, do you have anything?
Well, thank you.
That, we're adjourned.